This is the Inside Pitch with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by Light Up Media Group. Now, your host, former USA Baseball National Team coach, Peter Caliendo.
All right, let's come back with Dr. Hansen as we continue to talk about the mental game. As we continue here, I know we're going to get to the assessment because I think that's very important. We will not forget the assessment part. That I kind of left that for a little bit later simply because I really want to make sure that that we cover it well since I took it, and we'll find out. We won't tell the listeners how I did, but you know, we'll talk about that private, right? But let me ask you this question. This happens a lot, and you know, I'm trying to get to some questions also that, you know, coaches, it happens to coaches, happens to players, and I know you can help out here a great deal. But a simple one where, you know, whether it's hitting, I just struck out, you know, for the third time, or whether it's I just got a ground ball and I booted it. You see the reaction of a lot of young kids once they boot a ground ball. Their head goes down. Sometimes they don't even finish the play. What's some recommendations that you can give to help youngsters and help coaches teach youngsters how to deal with that?
Okay, so again, I don't want to belabor it, but I do need to start with it. It's all about the emotion. First thing is the emotional context that it even happens in. Now, the coach wants to do the best he can, and the parents in the league to create an environment where a kid feels safe and it doesn't feel like his self-worth is determined by his performance. We're going to uncollapse, I call it, pull apart for the player his self-worth and his performance. Most, it's very common that they collapse the two and think they're the same. But I think really what you're asking is from a technique standpoint, what to actually do in the moment, regardless of the context. Maybe your coach is great and maybe your coach is awful. What could the player do? My big thing for that is ABCs. I invented this one night to work with the night before I was going to talk to an 8-year-old team. And I use it now with corporate executives. I do a lot of executive coaching at a pretty high level and also work with little league players. And I use this in both domains. And A stands for act big. When we get upset or feel bad, we tend to contract. Either we're hiding or we're down in shame. And so A stands for act big, lift your head and chest. You actually, research is clear on it. It's a very interesting TED Talk by a woman named Amy Cuddy, C-U-D-D-Y, actually, that would support me on this one. Of the one, if you do one thing, act big, lift your head and chest. B stands for breathe big. Take a nice deep breath into your belly, ideally in and out through your nose, but it can be pretty tough to do that in the conditions you tend to need to go through your mouth. But get it down as deep as you can, and then the longer you exhale, the more you're relaxing and letting go. And there again, this is because of the fight or flight. If we experience threat, we'll stop breathing in order to not be seen, and also to enhance our own hearing so we can better hear what might be going on. So our breathing really gets compromised if you perceive any kind of threat. So if you're nervous, your breathing is reduced. And so, of course, you can use your cortex to take a deeper breath because you know you're not going to be seen by a tiger. And lastly is C is commit big. Commit to something, whether you're pitching, hitting, or playing defense. What am I committed to? See the ball, hit the ball. This pitch is going right there, or hit it to me. So it really just becomes go do your ABCs, act big, breathe big, commit big, and then D can is do it, play the pitch. Then no matter what happened on that pitch, do your ABCs, act big, breathe big, commit big, do it. Okay. And no matter what happened on that pitch, act big, breathe big, commit big, do it. And no matter what happened on that pitch, so I think you see the pattern.
Okay, now let's get to the part where, you know, I know you want to talk about it, and I was completely blown away by it because I took the coach's player, and you'll explain it, but I took the coach's player assessment, which took, I believe, about 40 minutes, and Then I met you in Vancouver, and in a very short period, we weren't going to talk about my assessment in details at that time, but a very short period, you were able to tell a lot about me, which that's what blew me away. And that's why I'm looking forward to, you know, finishing the assessment. But just from that, I believe, and just from our conversation, in Vancouver, I believe that every coach and player, in the world at all sports should be taking this assessment prior to doing anything. So let's get into it. I'll let you explain the assessment, and then we'll go with questions.
Great. So the context for it again is this self-awareness of understanding of what's actually happening. That going back through the conversation, that guy isn't just a hip. He's a human being. And so you can't just go and blow up his hip and not affect the whole of him. So you have to, and then I'd also talked about awareness. Hey, what's helpful for you? Well, you bring those together. And if you could, on a computer from the safety of your own home, take the full assessment, this Playbig assessment that I have, is if you take the full thing, it's 40 minutes. It's three different assessments in one. The first is behavioral. What do you see on the surface? How will someone act? Second is motivators. What motivates that player? And then third is the processor. It's really the science of axiology, but it's how the person actually thinks. It's like being an inner optometrist, measuring the lenses of how a person sees the world, measuring things that you don't even think now could be measured. I mean, but this is looked at them one at a time. The first one, the behavioral. This is one where you can see straight away, should this guy be, you know, is he Wade Boggs, where at 5:14 every day he runs, starts his run, and he has this set routine, and he's quite neurotic about his superstitions. Or so it occurs to me. I don't know the guy, but that's how it occurs to me. Or should he be more like Jeter and talking or should he be, hey, go out there and dominate. Dude, you are the man. Go out there. You're the beast. Go out there and dominate. Or would it be like, hey, man, stealth mode. One pitch at a time. The pitcher, he was for the Cubs and then the Braves,
Maddox.
Right. Hey, Greg, go out there and dominate, man. You go out there and crush him. It's like, I don't think that's what he was thinking. I could be mistaken, right?
But he looked like a professor from a university.
Is he that way? Well, you'd coach those, the dominator. There is like, you can think of some closer, like, I don't know, Al Roboski, I kind of date myself, but some closer who comes in and I'm going to throw 98 all effort, max effort for one inning, and I'm going to blow you up. Well, maybe that works for him. Or is it more the talkative kind of guy? Or is it more Greg Maddox? Or is it more the guy I mentioned earlier, the neurotic guy?
Yeah.
The routines that you very, very detailed. Well, if I take this assessment as a coach, I can know that about a player. And more importantly, first of all, I know that about myself. Because if I'm a high dominant guy, I'm going to think everyone should be that way. And so I'm going to come, Johnny, you're too quiet. Dominate. Or, Johnny, you're sitting here babbling along in the dugout. You got to shut up and look at the pitch and know what each pitch, study each pitch, and just be quiet. Sit. And for some players, that would be the best thing. And for some, that would like castrate them. So how do you know that? The good coach knows that, right? But it takes them half a year to figure it out. On this, I can tell you in 15 minutes how to coach a kid based on that. Mm. And know your own tendencies as a coach. What's your natural style? How do you perform? And there's a lot more to that than that. Then the second level is motivators. It's going to come out to be one of seven. And or a combination of seven. So that imagine that you know that a guy is really big on being on leadership. That's what drives him. Now, every time I talk to him, I said, hey, to be a good leader, you're going to want to do a good job of act. You're teaching him how to stretch or how to throw. And so, and you say, hey, we need you to be a leader on this team. And you can really lead us by setting a good example by how you warm up. Whereas some other guys like about helping others. And hey, you can, by doing a good job of warming up, you can help these other guys by warming up this way. And so you're teaching the same thing, but you're framing it based on what you know actually motivates that guy the most. And then lastly, there's the most powerful of all, which is looking at his processor. How does this guy see the game and see the world? What does he value? If I hold up a book and I hold up a video game, my son grabs the video game. I grab the book. It's because what I value and what he values differs. And so a better player can see in the environment what are the best things to pay attention to and what things are not worth putting attention to. And then even what are my emotional biases? It's hard to describe it unless you can really see this, but it's like I can say, for example, is this guy a good team player? Well, I can say, he's got, yes or no, he's got the ability to be a great team chemistry guy, but he's not doing it right now, or he is doing it right now, or he doesn't have a very good team player, or his relationship with his mechanics. How is he, what is he valuing and not valuing in his mechanics? And how about with his coachability or understanding the whole big picture of the game? How is this guy seeing the game? Because it's all about decisions. Every instant, every player is making a judgment. And people think, oh, the mental game to visualize or set goals and breathe. Yes, yes, yes. Those are all great. But if you're talking about the processor, you asked a kid, it's like, do you want to play this video game or this video game? What they might ask is, well, what, or do you want to play your favorite game on PlayStation 1 or this other game on PlayStation 4? Like, I want PlayStation 4. I mean, the graphics and the speed and everything is so much better. And so I can measure what kind of a processor the guy has. The examples I've given so far all have to do with how he sees and understands the game outside of him, where you'd expect Derek Jeter to score really high because he sees and understands teammates, the mechanics of things, where to be, the strategy, can measure that. And unlike the first two, this is better. There is like, I would draft this guy. I would give this guy $1 million way before I'd give this guy $1 million. It's like I've thought of calling it the Play Big Mental Toughness Showcase because it puts on display the way a showcase of the guy throws. He throws hard. What do you mean he throws hard? How hard does he throw? 83. Well, that's hard if he's 13. You know, but it's not hard if you're looking to draft him. It's quantifies it. How is this good? Oh, he's got a good mental game. Well, how good? Well, check Hansen's thing and see what processor the guy's running. Because the second half of this assessment then is how the guy sees himself. What's his baseball self-worth? Does he feel good about himself? Or does he have his stats and his self-worth collapsed as one thing? How comfortable is he in his role right now? Does he feel like he's fitting in? And also, very, very importantly, what is his identity? What is it? It's like I can interview his unconscious mind and say, hey, in the future, do you see yourself playing at a high level? Do you believe in yourself? And it's like, or as if he's taking a truth serum. He says yes or no, but the answer really wouldn't even be known to him. I trust the assessment way more than what the player himself says. And that just comes after several years of working with this. So that, or I'm just talking fast, but if you can imagine knowing this about a player and being able to say, here's your strength. You've got to use this strength and to address this weakness. So I can be very specific. It's like, okay, here, use this to address this. You're a good team. Your best, your highest scores is on team and relationship. So you've got to be, use that relate to address this, your own poor self-worth. You're so busy feeling bad about yourself, you're not being a good team player because you're internally focused on yourself. get outside yourself. I know you feel bad, but use your, you've got a great ability to be a great teammate and you're not doing it. And so you're costing your team this and this, and you're also causing yourself to underperform. So get out there and trust yourself to say to teammates what needs to be said and support them how they need to support them. And that's your shortest path to really excelling and enjoying and overall evolving as a person. So there.
Well, you know, as you're talking, I was visualizing a few things. You mentioned one of them. I was visualizing, you know, wow, can this is this thing fantastic? I mean, scouts can use it, you know, prior to signing guys. Agents can use it, as you mentioned, with the dollar figure. You know, colleges can use it when you're recruiting. There's so many guys and gals that could use this in all kinds of sports. But I'll tell you this, and I want to get your opinion on this. I believe strongly after listening to all this that who really needs, and everybody could use this, but who really, really needs it, because, you know, as our volunteer coaches, because that's not their profession. But if they knew something about themselves when it came to coaching, it's kind of like videotaping yourself at a practice, watch and then watching it, how you act. That can help you tremendously in a very short period, because now you're dealing with players. And then the kids at 10 years old, 11 years old that take this, or even younger, just to get to know them, now the coach knows a lot more about them also. I just see this as one of the most valuable tools that we should be using right away before any season begins.
No question. Just a quick example to bring it right to a very practical matter. I had a coach who scored super high. It puts things on 0 to 10, and he was like a 9.2 on, we'll call it mechanics, and an 8 on this big picture thinking. So he's, and then, but a 5 or almost a 6 on personal, on like a personal, like a relationship to relating to the person. And so he said to me, I said, well, I bet you're pretty clear on the mechanics. He said, oh, in a very confident way, he works with softball. He said, you show me one swing and I can name everything that the girl is doing wrong. And I can name you the one thing that would fix the most in one thing. And very, very proudly, and rightfully so. I'm sure he's great at that because he's a 9.2. He can really see that. That's a great strength. And the bigger picture number means he has an ideal in mind. He has this image in mind of how it ought to be, and he can see what's happening, and he compares the two, and it's like, that's not it. And so what the thing is, where he had to be my coaching for him, because he said, hey, I want to become the best that I can be. Please tell me what you think. And I said, watch out. And when you see something, stop and take a breath and maybe see it again and again, and then choose from this centered place, because your mechanics muscle, your practical not, is so highly developed that you will jump in to fix, we'll stick with the hip, that you might miss. Why is that? You might say, no. That would be the kind of guy I was talking to earlier. Get the hip, your hip out. Ah. Well, hey, what's going on, Lucy? Well, la la. And if the relationship is such, she might say, I'm feeling like I'm running out of time. I got to get this college scholarship or my parents are going to be upset. Oh, and now that's a whole different course, right? That's a whole different thing.
Sure.
And now if I'm all about her hip, I'm just adding, she's stressed out. And because I'm so biased towards seeing the mechanics and comparing her to the ideal, and I'm going to jump in and be a great coach and tell her how she's not meeting the ideal and just make it worse. It's like, okay, she keeps her hips in, but now her head is going a million miles an hour. And you're like, okay, great. Well, yeah, your swing is there. Good luck in the game. Just do that in the game. It's like, right, but now she's even more stressed. So that's what I mean by this is, no, we're talking to human beings here. We're not talking to machines. And they have all these different dimensions. They have dimensions that people don't even know that they have, which is this most of this assessment falls into that you don't know that you don't know it. It's like, I know I don't know physics. I don't know physics, you know, to speak of really, but I know that I don't know it. So
most coaches may not, obviously don't
know
think
what
that.
They don't
what about-
know. So this assessment, as you'll see shortly, measures things and tells you things that you don't even think to think about. And it's just a very, very powerful tool that can help people. My biggest goal is to help people really love their lives, help them love being themselves. And that requires, in my opinion, a considerable self-knowledge, you know, knowing yourself.
And, you know, as you mentioned, you know, as I'm going to see shortly, now I don't know if I want to see it. That's the problem. Let me ask you this. Two things. One, I want everybody to know, you know, how to do this assessment. How do they contact you to do the assessment? That's one. But the question I have, you know, parents are well-intended, but, you know, I've been to a lot of games where parents, boy, they can be crazy, you know, they're emotional. This would be great for them also, wouldn't it?
I have a parenting version of that behavioral one. And that can help you see, and you see the difference between the two parents. I had a call recently where the mom took the behavioral one, you know, the first of the three, behavioral, and then the player, and then the dad. And I had them all on the phone at the same time. And I said, well, dad, you're like this. Mom, you're like this. Kids, you're like this. And they're like, were you in the car last night? That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Instead,
that's what I felt like.
It's like, how did you know that? It's just like almost like watching a magician. It's like, wait a second. How did that? That's not. How did you know that? Who told you that? It's that revealing. And instead of, I mean, and the dad then was on the one hand mortified by realizing, oh my gosh, look at this. And then I have that conversation. I ask the player, hey, player, imagine that you're there and your dad's throwing your BP and you do something. And then he corrects you with something. Yeah, can you put yourself in that situation right now? See it, feel it. That's right. You're there. You're right there. He said, yeah, I'm right there. What do you feel in your body right now? He said, it feels like my arms are on fire. And it's, what is it? And it's like, it's anger. Okay. Dad, was that your intent? no, but he didn't know he was having that effect, and he's horrified that he was, but he had no way, because the communication and the relationship wasn't there and the knowledge wasn't there, you couldn't have that conversation. It just, the kid couldn't articulate it. He's a guy, and he's not going to say, you know, dad, when you say that, I feel like my arms are flame up in rage. A kid just isn't going to say that until the rage takes over and he, you know, smacks his dad with his bat or something, or does something stupid because the emotion runs over. But that's what I mean at the outset. This is a human being, and this is a richly complicated, beautiful thing that we have to appreciate, that we are, it's human beings playing this game, and most people don't quite have that much of appreciation for what's going on, and as a result, leave a lot on the table, both in terms of, in all three domains for me, and the three domains are excellence, like playing well. The other E is enjoyment, and the third E is evolution or evolving, where a person becomes a richer and more fulfilled human being by having played the game, particularly with this coach.
Well, you know what? We need to get this information out. So tell everybody, we're coming down to the end here. We've got two more quick questions. One's a question. One is at the end, I want you to kind of talk to the parents, coaches, and players, give them some final advice that you'd like to give them. But before we do that, give first of all, how do coaches, players, and parents do this evaluation? How do they contact you? How does this work?
PlayBigBaseball.com. There'll be intro there and a path to help guide you through to what's best for you. As we speak, it's going under a major renovation, but it will just be a very short time until that's up and running the way I want it to. And that someone can go there and say, well, I'm a coach, so click here. I'm a player. I'm a parent. Or I'm a GM.
Sure.
right on.
Scout, anybody. Okay, so we'll get that information out. Also, any advice, you know, for parents, coaches, after a ball game, they're going home, you know, bad game, good game. Any advice to some of the people out there on how to deal with those situations with their kids?
Just stay in touch with the love you have for them. And again, that comes mm-hmm. from being what I call premeditated. And that if you wait until you're in the environment, like I didn't do any premeditation the time when I went off last spring and I was an idiot yelling balk. I wasn't acting with what I believed.
We've all been there.
I had lost it. So sit down and say, okay, what do I want to have happen? What are the values? Who do I want to be? And then respond to that. When you feel the energy come up, do your ABCs. Just lift your head and chest, take a breath, commit. What am I committed to? I'm committed to being loving. And maybe I do come down on my kid and say, look, man, you're la, la, la. Or maybe I say, hey, let's go to the Dairy Queen. I can't tell you what to say in any given moment. It depends. There's just too many variables. I just try and point out the variables and say, hey, if you premeditate who you want to be and what your values are, and then you work in the moment, just using your breathing to stay in control of yourself, you'll make good decisions.
And what about any last minute advice when we're going to end the show here now that you want to give to everybody around the world?
I would just summarize it again by I would advocate for compassion. Compassion for yourself and for others, because it's very difficult to be a human. It's very complicated. And there's stuff that I'm learning. I learned a lot this morning about myself and so it's being a human being on this planet is quite challenging, especially since we're poorly designed for it. Our cortex has developed so fast that we have this fight, flight, or freeze that kicks in when it ought not. And that causes a lot of problems. That's mm-hmm. why we're so fat, by the way. We're designed to hunt and gather and we sit and eat Chinese. And so, indeed. And
we do it well.
Baseball is designed to be difficult. We intentionally set obstacles. So we're human, which is hard. And then we make it even harder by putting all these rules on us in this game. And so the parting word would be an advocation, would be a recommendation for compassion for you. And so for a coach, you yelled at a kid, hey, learn from it. You know, forgive yourself and move on. Player, same thing. Parent, same thing. So compassion.
Fantastic. And that will end our show. And we want to thank Dr. Tom Hansen for his time, because he has a lot going on in his career. He's all over the world. He's working with players, coaches, parents, businesses. So Dr. Tom Hansen, thanks for being on the Inside Pitch.
Hello, everybody. This is Jim Cromer from Youth Baseball Talk. On this week's show, we were fortunate enough to sit down and talk to sports marketing legend Jim Darby from Easton Sports. Had a great conversation with Jim, and at the end of the conversation, you're going to find out why we all know the name Easton. You're also going to learn a little bit about some of the upcoming bat changes that are going to happen for our kids. To hear more from this marketing legend for one of the biggest and largest companies in the world when it comes to the game of youth baseball, just go to youthbaseballtalk.com and click on this week's episode. We'll see you on the field.
All right, and for everybody listening to the show, remember, if you want to learn more about all our guests, get tips, see videos, and more, check out our Twitter at Inside Pitch Show. Don't forget our Facebook page has a lot of information. You can interact. That's facebook.com/InsidePitchShow. Go to our website at insidepitchpodcast.com. Plus, don't forget, email me. Love to hear from you. Love responding. The email is peter@insidepitchpodcast.com. If you have any questions, you'd like to hear a special guest, anything, just let us know. We're always available. And don't forget to help us. Go to iTunes and Stitcher or any major podcast outlet. Click subscribe. Leave us a 5-star rating and review if you really like the show. Let us know if you didn't like the show. Tell us why. Remember, don't forget to check out all our shows on Lineup Media Group for shows like Youth Baseball Talk and Let's Get It On. Check it out on lineupmediagroup.com. Feel free to share all our social media with all your friends. That just gets the show out and really helps us out a lot. And remember, coaches, education is the key.
This has been The Inside Pitch with Peter Caliendo, a Lineup Media Group production. Get access to all of our podcasts like Youth Baseball Talk, You're on the Clock NFL, and Let's Get It On with famed MMA referee Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock, online at lineupmediagroup.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.
Hey, Coach Caliendo and Inside Pitch followers, this is Mark Sheehan of the National Pitching Association in Chicago with your pitching tip of the week. This week's tip is pitch counts. With the spring season just around the corner, the number of pitches thrown in a game at the beginning of the season take on an even greater importance due to game competition pitches being more stressful than anything you've done in your preparation in the preseason, regardless of how much you've prepared or how little you've prepared. And by now, you should have built up some endurance with regular bullpens at practice and in your lessons, especially if you're a high school player, because your season is just a few weeks away and you're currently in tryouts, I'm sure, for many of you. The travel kids, 14 years and younger, you still have a month or so before your season begins, at least for the majority of the teams up here in the Midwest and northern regions. I realize some teams are traveling to warmer climates during the spring break, so you're probably looking at just a week or two from the start of your season, just like the high school kids. So if you're prepared properly for the season, here's the easiest and safest pitch count rule to follow. Simply multiply the pitcher's age by 5, and that's the number they should not exceed in a game. Any game, high school game, travel ball, tournament game, any game, any competition. So for a 10-year-old pitcher, if you multiply 10 by 5, that's 50. They should never exceed 50 pitches in a game. 11-year-old pitcher should not exceed 55, a 12-year-old 60, and so on and so forth. Conservative and safe. Now the second and most important portion of that pitch count rule to follow is, for every pitch they throw in a game, the athlete needs at least 1 hour of rest for recovery. So if your pitcher throws 24 pitches, he needs a full day of rest. If he throws 48, that means 2 days of rest, 72 pitches, 3 days, and so on. And as I mentioned earlier, those rules might be a bit conservative, but erring on the conservative side when it comes to pitch totals and staying steadfast in the rest and recovery period, 1 hour for every pitch, works, and your pitcher should stay healthy if followed. Remember, pitchers get injured for 3 primary reasons. Reason number 1 is they throw too many game pitches. Count the game pitches. Reason number 2, they lack efficient pitching mechanics. And then number 3, they lack the functional strength to handle those pitch totals, regardless of whether they possess efficient or inefficient mechanics. So in review, it's multiply the kid's age by 5. Don't exceed that number of pitches in a game. For every pitch they throw, add 1 hour to their rest period, rest and recovery. This is Mark Sheehan, NPA Chicago, signing off. Thanks, Coach Caliendo and Inside Pitch listeners.